The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to the Inevitable Tremor, where we will investigate the truth about earthquakes and the next big one. Welcome back. I am your host, DJ Tremor. In this episode, Under the Rubble, we will uncover the truth about rescue efforts and the rationale of surviving an earthquake if you had been trapped or otherwise stuck in a pile of rubble. In the article, Searching for Life Under the Rubble, published by Reuters in September 2023, written by several journalists, shed light on the measures taken after the event of a horrific earthquake. What makes this article unique is its emphasis on rescue efforts and international assistance. In the article, there are ample drawings and visual graphics that support the separate approaches. I will go over those approaches and share what I have learned and believe what is crucial to the study of earthquakes and the significance of rescue efforts. The article sources the International Search and Rescue Advisory Group, or INSERAG, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, known as FEMA. It is usually within the first 24 hours when search and rescues occur following a natural disaster. In any natural disaster event, time is of the essence, and the chances of survival significantly go down after the first several days. It is also a thing to remember that the affected area can be vast, meaning a large chunk of what's left is unsalvageable. On the flip side of things, experts have reason to believe people can survive up to a week or more with adequate access to air and water, among other factors like weather conditions and the extent of their injuries. The first step is a wide area assessment, where local authorities frequently get a preliminary assessment of the scene around the ruptured area as more resources are arriving. In some cases, the demolition may involve a single city, or it may disperse into the surrounding countries. The supplemental search teams, not the rescue teams themselves, rely on an initial visual assessment by active mobile transport by air or ground, with the infrastructure permitting. Then, the survey readily points out resources and hazards and immediate priorities for search and rescue teams. Finally, the disaster area is commonly drawn into sectors to allocate command and to assign search teams. Aircraft like helicopters and small planes can be useful for this cause and provide a good vantage point and expedite the survey. The next part of the rescue effort is the worksite triage. This assessment identifies viable live rescue sites in an allocated sector. The command center uses this information to prioritize rescue sites and decide which teams to deploy where. Emergency teams aim to assess the entire sector as quickly as possible. In the case there are volunteers, such as locals, they will be looking out for possible voids and building materials, documenting it for future reference. Volunteers may also inspect structural integrity and other hazards, and these locals may be working in the rubble already and could be a source of information on the structure. According to the Reuters article, quote, at each site, rescuers seek to gather essential information such as building type, size of construction materials, and a, quote, building collapse category, end quote, aimed at classifying the different types of damage and danger, end quote. The four or five classifications are inclined, where columns and walls have collapsed into an incline, an overhang, when the higher part of the building hangs over the lower part. Next, the debris heap, where some of the floors, columns, and walls have collapsed into a heap of rubble. Next, overturn, where part or all of the building has fallen to the side. Finally, pancake, where floors have completely collapsed on top of each other. Well, how may survivors be found? Well, another point to mention, as rescue workers go through the destruction, they pay attention to survivable void spaces. The generalization is that if the space is big enough for a person to crawl through, the chances of survival are higher. Small voids are more dangerous as people trapped inside have less space to avoid further movement of debris or collapsing structural elements. The next stage is the rapid search and rescue. In this stage, rescuers and with a canine search team or dogs look to identify sites where more thorough search could be significant. Specially trained dogs can be used to sniff out signs of life moving quickly in the rubble. Another step is sound signaling. In sound signaling, this can be useful in warning search and rescue teams, specifically requesting silence or indicating a resume or pause in work. It works quite effectively as Morse code by using short and long signals. The next step is a full search and rescue. This phase of operations identifies and rescues a smaller number of trapped survivors that local rescuers, first responders, or level 3 operations were unable to reach. Rescue crews try to enter most or all survivable voids left inside collapsed structures. The process can involve numerous teams and can last several days. Finally, the last step, recovery. In this last stage of the rescue effort, steps include the removal of large rubble piles and recovering bodies. Along with that comes a tough decision of cutting forms of searching, and in the case of foreign affairs, it is up to the discretion of the coordinating UN agency and the state. The fight or flight. When your fear of survival is taking over, the fight or flight mode is activated as a physiological response. You have the choice to fight for your life or flee the scene. Let us translate this into an earthquake situation. You have been covered in enormous debris and have had no chance of fleeing the scene. So what might you do to keep yourself alive? Would you scream for help until the person hears you, or try to be Superman and release the boulder which has trapped you? Unfortunately, you may have no option but to just fight to survive and call for help. To clear our immediate thoughts, let us look no further than February 2023 of last year, when an earthquake struck in southeastern Turkey and its magnitude affected the bordering region of Syria. The 7.8 magnitude earthquake claimed the lives of over 41,000. One of the best methods to aid in your own rescue, according to Dr. Stephen Morris, an associate professor in the emergency medicine department at UW Medicine with experience responding to foreign disasters, is to discover a means of communicating with the outside world that you are still alive, Morris told ABC News. Morris goes on to say, quote, "The really only thing that's paramount to express is being found is the only way of survival," end quote. It is not a surprise that those who have access to water are the ones who can survive several days on their own. It has even been discovered that people can survive being buried under debris for more than 2 weeks. However, if no one has been found alive in the first day or two following a disaster, search and rescue operations are often discontinued around a week later. Let me share you the incredible story, which you might not believe, but it's true, from the Turkey-Syria earthquake, of a 17-year-old boy who had been stuck for 94 hours, almost 4 days, and drank his own urine to stay alive. Well, drinking your own urine is not advised. In fact, it does not increase your survival rate. Well, the boy's rationale for drinking his own urine may seem to fight dehydration, but that's not the case. Morris denounces this method, if you're enclosed beneath rubble, as well as drinking seawater or alcohol, because it can also be dehydrating. But in the extreme circumstances, and you have an absolute need to drink a liquid, given you have no access to soda and coffee or water, you can drink it as long as you know its dehydrating effects. In case you have forgotten, without food, the human body can survive weeks and weeks, if not months, without eating. Morris says, quote, "It's very unpleasant, but the majority of people will not die without eating," end quote. Let's roll back to 1989. Let's unfold a story of an unexpected survivor of the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake. The 6.9 earthquake that had struck the San Francisco Bay Area left commuters on the roads and highways on a track of terror. One of the most dramatic and unexpected recovery efforts was of the I-880 survivor, then 58-year-old Buck Helm, who, like the boy from the Turkey-Syria earthquake, was trapped in the dark for over 90 hours. After nearly 4 days without food and water, Helm was discovered after a rescue worker was raking debris, and about 5 hours until after his waving hand was spotted. According to rescue leaders, the small pocket of air where Helm survived was out of sight until Friday night, when a Caltrans crew conducted a stress test to determine if the pile of rubble was safe for workers. The test used a cable hooked to a piece of freeway and pulled. Despite being rescued, Helm lived for a month after and died in the hospital of respiratory failure. Something that I should have mentioned earlier, but following a person being rescued, Dr. Morris said it's important to examine patients for any crush injuries and renal failure, especially if they haven't had water for days. In their fight for survival, dehydration is prominent, and the first thing to fail is their kidney. In another sense, the effects of crush injuries, where your crushed tissue expels toxins, which then filter it out throughout the kidney, and causing your kidney to become compromised. Although Helm was never able to tell his remarkable story, visitors at Ripley's Believe It or Not in San Francisco may see the car which had been crushed from the collapsed freeway. I hope after going through the phases of search and rescue that you will understand the gravity of the work done to save lives and, in part, keep yourself alive. It is important for survivors to keep calm and continue to make noise and try to be heard and found. The human body can physiologically live without food for weeks, but having access to air and water is key to survival. As a reminder, the fight or flight response is a response that comes up when an imminent danger or threat persists. But the time of being rescued is only so long, and the fact that you're keeping hope alive and spatial awareness is a scary situation.